Okay, so November 3rd, still 2022. The time, 17:23 hours. This is Ward Green. I am reporting on what I just did outdoors, and I have a great, happy report about the Merrell boots. They're Moab 3s. They're a mid-hiking boot in terms of how high they are, and that's just one of the details that it only matters if you're going to order them yourself, perhaps, or if you're thinking about comparing with what you've ordered or something like that. But it makes a difference to know whether they're low cut or, a mid would be a little bit higher. Okay, that's unusual. Yeah, that's unusual. Something is acting strange here. Let's see. This, okay. It says float on top. It doesn't float on top, even though I'm telling it to float on top. Normally that works. Okay. That was unusual. Okay, so I had a lot of very positive thoughts, but now that I'm once you start the tape, now that I've started the tape rolling again, I have to come back in terms of back to where I was in terms of my how much information I've already given people where I am now in the in my current degree, in the number of things up to the point to which I've published things. That point is where I have to come back to. I can't come back. I can't just tell you where I am. I mean, I might want to. I'm not saying I don't want to. I just can't. The thoughts completely leave my mind. Whatever thoughts I had prior to starting the recording, pressing start, as soon as I press start, it's a different situation because I'm talking to different people. Well, one of the thoughts I had, yeah, I'm talking to different people. I'm not talking to anybody when I'm before I press start. That's the point. But when I mean, I'm talking to Jehovah, maybe to Jesus and those people, the angels. I'm not talking to. And to whatever other friends of, I'm thinking of, I'm not talking to anybody but them in my mind. But I had another thought about this. Now I might not be able to think of what it was, but I thought about somebody. Yeah, I don't know. We don't know that anybody stole anything. That's the other thing. We don't know that. So then the question is, what if somebody made a mistake and they just forgot to deliver one of the items? Or what if an item could slip through the crack? I know what it was. I know what it was. I thought of sometimes packages get destroyed in shipping. They get totally destroyed. That happens in shipping. Yep. It does happen because it's happened to me already. Somebody said that happened. They said that already, and so that they had to. I had to order it again if I wanted to get it, but I didn't order it again because I didn't need it, turned out. That was an item I ordered that I didn't end up needing because I ended up getting new tires, so I didn't need to work on my old rims. I got new wheels and new rims and wheels for my car, so I didn't, my van. So I didn't need to get all the stuff I was going to use to fix my old rims, but that package was destroyed in shipping, is what they said. And I had to order again if I wanted it. I didn't order it, but that's interesting. So this one, they didn't tell me anything. But sometimes packages do get destroyed in shipping. They undoubtedly sometimes get lost. I mean, I might know deep down that I was robbed, or I might feel it. You do feel it. Like I was talking about quantum entanglement. We are entangled. So if somebody does. But I can just know there's a bad feeling. I can't know if I've been robbed. I might know that somebody feels bad, or I might feel like I've been robbed because I might feel like somebody is is gloating about it, about having robbed me or so, you know, I might feel, you might feel whatever, I feel things. I feel what other people feel, even though we're not close in geography. Or whether we are, it doesn't matter how close we are in geography. I feel things across the, you know, subspace, or whatever you want to call it, the, what do we call that? Underlying space, it's, you know, whatever it's, they used to call it, they used to have a belief in something called the ether, which was non-material, a thing that existed behind all of space. It was the ether, like another dimension behind the physical dimension. There's another dimension, that sort of thing. But I mean, through the whatever the cosmological, it doesn't have to be physical space, but we feel something. Just like they said, the universe is not locally real. So because the universe is not locally real, according to certain scientists, that means it doesn't matter how far away something is, we still feel it. That's what it means to me. That's how I take it. And it's been true. I can feel things with people on other continents, or, you know, it doesn't matter, or wherever. Or like, if someone in my family has a problem, I feel it sometimes. If it's someone I'm close to, I definitely feel it. And I know something has happened just by the way I feel. And I don't always know it's my family right away until they let me know. But I mean, I think you can even know that. So you can even know quite detailed information in some cases. But anyway, so I'm not really concerned about this package because I know that everything is connected, and whatever happens, it's all connected, right? What goes around, it comes back, all that stuff, it's going to come back to you. And if it was a mistake on their part, should I point out their mistake? And am I going to become the person who always points out everyone's mistakes? Is that my job? I don't think so. So I'm not going to be concerned about it. I don't care. I mean, I do care how much money it is. I just don't care. I don't care to... I mean, I can... I'm going to get $400 worth of something from somewhere. I mean, I'm not going to have to steal it. I'm going to earn it, but I'm going to get that $400 back, one way or another, by what I learn from having lost it. You know what I mean? Or either that, or the package will turn up, or whatever. But I'm going to get that $400 back. So, I've already got it back, actually. But I'm going to get more. I'm going to get more than that back. Actually, I'm going to get it back with much interest, I think. But I'm actually thrilled that it happens. I'm thrilled it happened in this case, too, because I don't need the second table all that much, because I figured out how I can do without it. Once I got the first table, I could figure out how I could use it so that I don't need the second table, because I have other stuff I can use, other tables I can use. But, you know, that wasn't clear. And I know they're great tables. It's a decent quality. It's a, you know, a sturdy enough quality construction. Maybe it's not super great. I think they said it could hold 1,000 pounds or something. But or maybe it was more than that. Whatever it was, I'm not sure I would ever put that much weight on it. Because I don't think it's that sturdy. And it depends where the legs, how long they're extended. If you extend the legs too long, it's more wobbly, so you wouldn't put a lot of weight on this table. But anyway, that's the story of the table. The boots are the more important one. After wearing these boots, I found today, after wearing them with the Thorlow socks, which are not thick, Thorlow socks, which are great socks, but they're not very thick, and the only modification that I made to the Merrell boots was I put in the triad inserts, which are a 3/4 insert. They're not even a full insert. And I probably didn't even need the triad insert. I probably really didn't need it. I probably could have gotten away with, or gotten by with just, better watch my elbows. I don't want to bang them on the table like I just did. I didn't hurt it. Didn't hurt myself, though. But I could probably get by without the triad insert, because especially once the boots are broken in. But my report from today is that I wore the triad inserts, and by the end of the day, after like a couple of hours, I was out about 4 o'clock. It's not even an hour and a half. I worked for about an hour and a half, maybe, or a little less than that. Is that right? It's 5:30 now, so. But I worked pretty hard. I worked pretty intensely. I'm just raking leaves, not cutting anything these days for a while, but I'm intending to get my chains sharpened soon, somehow, or get a new chain put on that one saw anyway. Put the new chain on it, the one I haven't used much or maybe never used. So I intend to do some cutting maybe, but I don't know if I need to do any more cutting this year, but I might. Depends how much time I have too. That program I was booting never booted. Planetary, after 1 hour, it still didn't boot. It's still trying to boot, apparently. Still trying to boot. It might boot eventually. We'll have to give it some more time to see if it's booting or if it's locked and hung up. But I'm running that program in VirtualBox. So that program might not run. We'll have to see. Or it takes an hour long to boot. Not very practical. Well, I do a lot of. I update everything all the time. I'm continually reviewing things all the time, in a lot of areas. But you have to do that, though. I'm survival oriented. I'm oriented around how am I going to. Not just survival for today, but I'm always wanting to keep track of as many important things as I can. To make sure that I know what's happening so that if something changes, I could see that. Oh, I put some water on my concrete work today, too, to give it a little more curing time, try and cure it a little bit. I should have used a spray bottle, I guess, but I just kind of dabbed it on with my, splashed it on with my hand, tried to get some water on that. That'll probably help with the curing of that concrete a little bit, but, it's probably curing fairly slowly, so it still felt like it was a bit damp. The concrete felt a little bit, when I rubbed it with water, I could still felt a little bit like the concrete wasn't dry yet. But it must be dry. Pretty sure it's, but it didn't feel like it. That's good. If it's curing slowly, that's good. So that's great. That's better. 16, what was I checking? I don't remember why I was checking this. The weather? Yeah, well, it looks like we're supposed to get rain on. It's ridiculous. 6 days from now, that's the first rain we're supposed to get. I really noticed the pollen this morning too, but no, the marrow boots. I think coming back to the marrow boot. Yeah, I'm just checking the weather. The weather looks. I forget why I was checking the weather though. Whether was it because I wanted to see what the precipitation was or the temperature or what. I don't think it was the precipitation, but they're still not indicating any precipitation. Let me refresh the page. For the next 6 days? 5 days? Oh, there's a little bit of a change. The sixth. Looks like it's 25%, but that was no. There was never any more than 25 on any one of the days. 25% probability. So it looks. Still 6 days, almost, 7 days including today, it looks like. It's ridiculous how much dry weather, and how warm it is for November. So if this weather holds up, there'll be some work to do, and maybe I'll get to cut some more trees this year. It's possible. I won't get to burn that wood this year, but that's okay. I'll find a way. I've got this ash in the basement I can burn, so I want to burn that. But if I need to, only. I don't actually want to burn it because I don't need all this wood. Probably I can burn some of it. But like when I cut the stump down from the ash tree, I had a stump that was about 4 feet long, I think. 3 feet long, maybe, and so I cut that down, and then I ripped that into planks. So those planks, I could cut them up smaller and I could burn them. I don't need them. That wood was not in the best condition because it was subjected to a lot of sunshine after the tree was cut down, so maybe that wood can be burned. Anyway, it's my emergency stock of wood if I need wood to burn in the winter, if it gets really cold and I need wood. But I've got, like let's say we have a power failure or something, I've got some wood to burn. So it's important, to be prepared. I don't have a lot of dry wood. In the future, I'm going to stack my wood, I think, around under my eaves. And that way, I'll have more, be able to stack more wood around. I'll stack whatever wood I get, I think. If I cut more trees, I'll stack it around under my eaves. Around my house, that's my plan, I think. I think I'll do that. And that's, I don't know, I just didn't do that because the wood wouldn't be kept quite as dry that way, but it'll get wet, but I can put some kind of an old tarp on it and weigh it down with something, some rocks or something. I can keep it moderately dry. It'll be good enough, I think. I'll be able to get enough dry wood from that, or I can put planks, planks of plywood that are wide enough over the top of the pile and weigh that down, maybe. The wind blows from one side of the house against the house on that side where I want to put the wood, so I guess it's not going to blow the plywood away, probably, but it might blow it against the house and blow it up against the house or something. But I haven't thought about this. But the Merrill report, I want to talk about the Merrill boots again. Just to finish that report, they fit so perfectly. They're absolutely perfect. But that's because my feet get a little bit damp, I think, once they warm up. And so the sock doesn't slip as much. My right heel, neither heel, but my right heel wasn't slipping anymore. It was phenomenal. And they felt perfect when I walked in them. That's the way you want boots to feel, was exactly how they felt. The way they felt was exactly how you want a boot to feel when you're walking. So both my boots, I mean the Merrells, the left and right boots of the Merrells are now fitting perfectly when I'm warmed up. And I can wear the Thorlow socks, which were not the thickest sock that I have. So if I wore a thicker sock, the problem is that the thicker sock might be more slippery too. But like something tells me the Smartwool might slip more than the Merrells, but the Merrells are thin enough that they can get the moisture from my foot maybe and absorb it. And it wicks too. It wicks up into the sock, so maybe that prevents the slipping. Well, the Smartwool, they also wick. They're also great socks. But I didn't wear those for some reason. But I wanted to try the Thorlows, and I think the swelling of the foot too, when the blood flow gets to the foot, just swells a little bit, and that prevents my right heel from slipping. It totally prevents it. It was perfect. The fit was perfect. So I think once these boots are broken into, I don't think there's going to be any slipping in the right heel at all. So that's the thing. But if there is, then I'll have to address it. If there's ever any problem with it, I will address that because I'll have to, right? I'll have to solve that problem because the boots are too close to being perfect in every other way. Like, I don't think I never would have wanted a size 7. That would not be right. Or a 7.5 or any other size. Just size 8 is the right size for me. I've got an older pair of Merrells that are size 8, so and it's the right size for me. And now I've got two pairs of Merrells that both are serviceable, actually. They're both serviceable. That's phenomenal. I mean, I'm pretty happy. And I know the Danners are fitting. They fit better than the Merrells in terms of the slipping when I tried them last today, I guess I tried them. When I tried these new insoles that didn't work. But the new insoles, I can put them in my mules. I have Nayot. Nayot are the sandals I've got on now, and I have a pair of Nayot mules, which are, you know what a mule is? It's an open-ended shoe, right? That has no heel on it. Well, anyway, I can put these new insoles in those, and they're going to work fine. They work perfect in the $15 insoles that didn't work in my boots will work fine in those. The ones I had in the Nayots were the walk fits, which were too hard, a big hard arch support underneath my foot, uncomfortable to wear those in the mule. So I'll put all the stuff I have, like all of the old and new inserts and insoles and everything. My old Merrells, I don't wear, they don't have anything in them. The old Merrell boots have nothing in them. I don't, the old. The insert that was in the original Merrell insert that was in the old boots, I've taken those. I took those out a long time ago, and I just noticed that In my bag, I have those old inserts. They're Merrill's. You can barely read the name Merrill on them because I used them for a while, I guess. But the old Merrill boots, maybe I should put those back now. That's right. I should put those inserts back in those Merrill boots. I took those inserts out because I was treating the Merrill boots with the foot powder to try to get rid of, you know, all the fungus and all the problems, the odor that was in them over many years. That was the reason I almost threw them out. But then I wrapped them all up, or I put a lot of foot powder in these shoes and let them sit for a long time. Those Merrill, my old Merrill boots. I need cream on my foot here. Hang on a sec. So the old Merrill boots, I just have to put, if I can put the old insoles back in them if I want. I mean, they don't need it. I can wear them without. But what I recommend, what I suggest to people anyway, is that you save all of your insoles. Save them all. Because they might work in one other of your shoes, right? I've got this itchy, dry skin on my foot, and I just needs a little bit of cream. And then, if I don't treat it, it's going to get worse, far worse, rather than better. And as soon as I put this cream on, this vitamin E cream, the problem is solved. It's amazing. But, I mean, it'll solve it for a while, maybe, maybe not. But, I mean, this area of my foot has never bothered me before. It's just an area that in recent weeks, it's been an issue it's itchy. If I don't treat it properly, it's going to be worse. You can't bandage it if it's eczema. You can't bandage. I've had experience with this. I've had experience with it, and it's a very bad idea to put a bandage on it because it gets worse with a bandage. You can't do that, so you have to treat it properly. And you can't scratch it. You shouldn't scratch it either. Very bad to scratch it. But you learn, you know. I'm going to have to maybe put the cream on again later on. So the old Merrells, I've got the insoles for those still in the bag of all my insoles. So you can keep all your insoles. That's what I'd say. You can save all your insoles. Save the ones that don't work, because they might work in other shoes later. You can keep them, and they're useful. They might save your life sometime, or save your day or something. Make your boots fit where they wouldn't fit before. Make your shoes fit, whatever. If you're the kind of person who normally needs those inserts, then I highly recommend saving those inserts. Just keep a bag full of them or whatever, or two bags, however many bags you need to keep all of them together, and then just, you know, try to keep them all in one bag if possible, so you don't lose track of which bag they're in. But that's it. That's my suggestion. And I've got good news on the mirror. I haven't worn the Danners recently, so I'll be trying those out again, probably. Once I get my boots broken in, then I'll be able to kind of, you know, put them aside maybe, and I won't have to use them as much. I don't have to wear the Merrells anymore now, like the new ones, because I'm completely confident that they're going to fit perfectly. So I don't have to wear them to break them in. Is what I mean. I mean, I don't have to, you know, I can just put them aside. Whenever I need them, I know they're going to serve me perfectly well. So the Merrells are, my report on those is really good. I'm really happy with those. I mean, you know, you don't know what happens. The thing is, you don't know, you know. Nobody is really, or people aren't necessarily thieves. They're not necessarily criminals. You don't know that. When you're robbed, the thief, on the one hand, doesn't really want to get found. He doesn't want to get found out by you, right? But he probably, you know, a thief is also doing it knowing it's gonna cause, well, maybe he thinks it won't do you any harm, but he can't be friendly. He's not doing it because he thinks he's your friend. He's doing it because he thinks you owe him something or something like that. So he's not. He's, if anything, maybe he's seeking some kind of revenge against you or something like that. You know, that it's could be that. It, so I'm aware of all those things. You know, I'm aware. I know all the things that go on in other people's minds, just like they go on in all of our minds at, you know, whatever. Even if we're not people who are thieves, you know, even if we've never stolen anything ourselves, we've all probably thought about it enough that we know and understand how people think about it. So Isaiah 33, let's try and do this. Let's try and do our study. I still haven't listened to my original video yet from this morning. I haven't finished. I listened to about 33 minutes of it. But no, I'm making these videos for my little children, especially, right? And for my friends and all the people who care about me. That's why I'm making these videos. But my enemies are welcome to watch. I mean, it's not like, you know, I'm trying to prevent them. Of course, you know, if they feel like I'm their enemy, or if they feel like they're my enemy, they're still welcome. Just like in Isaiah, we read, his hand is stretched out still. Jehovah's hand was stretched out to his people, even though they weren't willing. So Isaiah 33, let's read it. Jehovah, help us to be able to relax and absorb this information in Jesus' name. Amen. The thing is, I'm kind of wound up because I was working pretty hard. So I'm hoping I can calm down mentally and get this information absorbed. And I'm not sure how much of Psalm 33 I absorbed, but you know, reading it out loud, you always absorb it. So Isaiah 33. Woe to you who are despoiling. There's a robber, a thief, a despoiler. Woe to you who are despoiling without you yourself being despoiled. And to you who are dealing treacherously without others having dealt treacherously with you. As soon as you have finished as a despoiler, you will be despoiled. As soon as you have done with dealing treacherously, they will deal treacherously with you. O Jehovah, show us favor. In you we have hoped. Become our arm every morning. Yes, our salvation in the time of distress. At the sound of turmoil, peoples have fled. At your arising, nations have been dispersed. And the spoil of you people will actually be gathered like the cockroaches when gathering in. Like the onrush of locust swarms that is rushing against one. I'm being distracted because I have all these insects that are coming into my house now at the end of the year. So when I read about this, I can't read it without thinking about these. That is rushing against one. They're rushing against me, in a sense. Some houseflies are dying and I'm trying to take care of them or whatever. Like, because they look like they're not dead. They're still alive. I have compassion for them. Jehovah will certainly be put on high, for he is residing in the height. He must fill Zion with justice and righteousness. And the trustworthiness of your times must prove to be a wealth of salvations. Wisdom and knowledge, the fear of Jehovah, which is his treasure. Look, their very heroes have cried out in the street. The very messengers of peace will weep bitterly. The highways have been made desolate. The one passing over the path has ceased. He has broken the covenant. He has contemned the cities. He has taken no account of mortal man. The land has gone mourning, has withered away. Lebanon has become abashed. It has moldered. Sharon has become like the desert plain, and Bashan and Carmel are shaking off their leaves. Now I will rise up, says Jehovah. Now I will exalt myself. Now I will lift myself up. You people conceive dried grass. You will give birth to stubble. Your own spirit as a fire will eat you up. And peoples must become as the burnings of lime, as thorns cut away. They will be set ablaze even with fire. Hear, you men who are far away, what I must do. And know, you who are nearby, my mightiness. In Zion the sinners have come to be in dread. shivering has grabbed hold of the apostates. Who of us can reside for any time with a devouring fire? Who of us can reside for any time with a devouring fire? Who of us can reside for any time with long-lasting conflagrations? That's a word. Long-lasting conflagrations. What a word. There is one who is walking in continual righteousness and speaking what is upright, who is rejecting the unjust gain from frauds. Look at that. We're talking about fraud and despoiling. Who is shaking his hands clear from taking hold on a bribe. Who is stopping up his ear from listening to bloodshed, and who is closing his eyes so as not to see what is bad. He is the one that will reside on the heights themselves. His secure height will be craggy places, difficult to approach. His own bread will certainly be given him. His water supply will be unfailing. A king in his handsomeness is what your eyes will behold. They will see a land far away. Your own heart will comment in low tones on a frightful thing. Where is the secretary? Where is the one that does the paying out? Where is the one counting the towers? No insolent people will you see, a people too deep in language to listen to, of a stammering tongue without your understanding. Behold Zion, the town of our festal occasions. Your own eyes will see Jerusalem, an undisturbed abiding place, a tent that no one will pack up. Never will its tent pins be pulled out, and none of its ropes will be torn in two. But there the majestic one, Jehovah, will be for us a place of rivers, of wide canals. On it no galley fleet will go, and no majestic ship will pass over it. For Jehovah is our judge, Jehovah is our statute giver, Jehovah is our king. He himself will save us. Your ropes must hang loose. Their mast they will not hold firmly erect. They have not spread a sail. At that time, even spoil in abundance will have to be divided up. The lame ones themselves will actually take a big plunder. And no resident will say, I am sick. The people that are dwelling in the land will be those pardoned for their error. That was Isaiah 33. We know that scripture, no resident will say, I am sick. Probably we know that scripture. We've heard that before. But if not, now we have. But look, the lame ones will take a big plunder, it says. Spoil will have to be divided up. But it talks about despoiling at the very beginning of this chapter. Woe to you who are despoiling. You will be despoiled, is the message there. As soon as you have done with dealing treacherously also, you will be dealt with treacherously. So all these things are going to come upon the despoilers and the treacherous ones. Their very own dealings are going to come back to them. Just like I was saying, without knowing this was coming in our reading today, that what goes around comes around. It's that idea that what goes around comes around. If somebody did steal my things, you know, I don't have to say or do anything, but what goes around comes around. It's going to come to them. It's going to come back to them. They're going to have to cope with it. Their own dealings will come back. But look at this expression, a wealth of salvations, verse 6. What scripture that is. An abundance of salvation. In another translation there, the Study Bible, yeah. A wealth of salvations. A wealth of salvations. Wisdom and knowledge, the fear of Jehovah, with the fear of Jehovah, which is his treasure. The fear of Jehovah, which is his treasure. In Proverbs, the fear of Jehovah is the beginning of wisdom, something like that. Proverbs and Psalms 111 too, but Proverbs 1 and 7, Psalms 111:10, but Proverbs 1:7, the fear of Jehovah is the beginning of knowledge. Wisdom and discipline are what mere fools have despised. So we're not trying to reread the whole thing, but there are people, right? The heroes in the street, they've broken the covenant in verse 8. Contemned the cities. Contemning means saying something bad against it. It's like, or is it worse than that? Let me think. Let's find out what it is. It's not the same as condemning. It's contemning. To treat or regard with contempt. Yeah. It's to regard it with contempt, right? It's not to say anything necessarily, but it could mean condemning as well, but it means to regard with contempt. And this here, these, right, the one passing over the path has ceased. The heroes have cried out in the street. In other words, they're not hero, not heroic. They're crying out in the street, weeping or saying, help me, kind of thing. They're crying out in the street. They're in pain. The heroes are not acting heroic. The one passing over the path has broken the covenant in verse 8, contemning the cities. He has taken no account of mortal man. The land has gone mourning. This is a prophecy of Isaiah. It makes me think, it's similar to the idea of this people who are resorting to vaccinations, thinking they can solve their problems with vaccinations. In a way, they're not being heroic, for one thing, but they're also denying, they don't believe, they're under the control of people who don't believe that vitamin C works, and vitamin C does work. The double Nobel Prize winner, Linus Pauling, believed in mega vitamin C dosages. He believed in consuming quantities of vitamin C that would be considered mega doses by most people, but they're really not very large, or they're not. It's not really a lot of vitamin C, and it's gram-like quantities, you know, 2 grams at a time kind of quantities of vitamin C, which is 2,000 milligrams at a time. He believed in that, and he also won 2 Nobel Prizes, one of them for chemistry. So, you know, I didn't used to believe it, but I believe it now because I know it works for my case. Certainly, I've never had a cold that became fully developed since I learned about vitamin C. Vitamin C. Since I learned about vitamin C, every infection, not just colds, but all infections, including colds, have been eliminated with vitamin C by taking 2 grams at a time, or I take whatever, 4 grams or 6 grams at a time, or whatever it is. But if you're not, if you've never taken it before, you could, or if you don't know, you take 2 grams at a time, 2 grams every 20 minutes, until the symptoms are gone, basically, until you have diarrhea because your vitamin C is, you know, enough. You've got enough vitamin C, then you'll have diarrhea, because that's what the reaction is if you go beyond the bowel tolerance for vitamin C. So that's the way you know you've healed, cured the infection, is because you have a bowel, you know, a bowel movement, but I mean, you have a violent bowel, you know, sort of your bowel evacuates itself or whatever, you know, you have a pretty definite bowel movement, let's say, I guess, and then you know you don't take any more vitamin C when that happens because you don't need it. But but the thing is, there are doctors who practiced vitamin C therapy, who used vitamin C for everything that was to do with infections. They used vitamin C. It's known that it cures every sort of infection, like hepatitis, mononucleosis. I mean, there's no end to it. All the different infections it can heal. And these people who are going in the way of vaccines, so that's the way the drug companies want you to go, because they stand to make a fortune from it. But you're going to have to vaccinate everything if you go that way. You're going to have to vaccinate every single thing. Whereas all these things can be, you don't have to prevent them until you get the symptom. Then you prevent it with vitamin C. As soon as you get any symptom that could be an infection, you treat it with vitamin C. And I mean, I've taken vitamin C inappropriately because of my allergies, but then you very soon realize it's not, I don't know, you take whatever, you take whatever amount you're going to take normally. Like if I'm just getting the start of a cold, I'll take 6 grams of vitamin C and then I'll see what happens. If I still get symptoms, I'll keep taking it. But if I don't get symptoms, then I'll know, well, that wasn't, it's gone. Or it was, in some cases, it's just allergies, but I've had many infections that are not allergies that I've wiped out with vitamin C by just taking 6 grams of it. And sometimes I've taken 20-some grams of it. I forget exactly how many grams, 20-something. Probably not as much as 28 grams. Whatever it was I took, it was enough to get rid of a flu that I was coming down with. But it didn't go away till the second day. I had some more after effects because of the flu, you know. I still had some effects, but I mean, it would have been way worse if I hadn't taken any vitamin C, if I hadn't taken it in the quantity that I took it. It's all about the quantity of vitamin C. You need to keep taking it. You can eat a pound of it easily. You can eat more than that, but a woman ate a pound of vitamin C and it cured mononucleosis in 3 days, but she had to eat a pound of it before it completely cured her infection. That was one example given by a vitamin C doctor who used vitamin C in his practice all the time. But these infections, these vaccinations are, you're going to have to vaccinate everything, and you're going to have to revaccinate and all this. They're not without risk, vaccinations. So it's not heroic to do that, is what I'm saying. It's not heroic. It's more heroic. It's far more heroic to be wise and to not go in the way of some fearful advice from people who don't know anything about the real answer to these problems. Now, some people can't take vitamin C because of their intestines, but they could get intravenous vitamin C also if they can't take it orally. And that works even better, intravenous vitamin C. So anyway, but you have to get someone to do that for you. Find someone to do that for you, or find a practitioner who can do that. Your ropes must hang loose. Never will its tent pins be pulled out. A king in his handsomeness is what your eyes will behold. It's quite interesting. So there is, even though there would be these heroes who wouldn't be acting properly, you know, the sinners have come to be in dread in Zion in verse 14. Shivering has grabbed a hold of the apostate, grabbed hold of the apostates, right? I'm tired. I can barely read because my fatigue is not allowing my mouth to even move properly. Just physically a little bit, you know, muscular fatigue, that's all. There is one who's walking in continual righteousness. This is part of the prophecy. Who's rejecting unjust gain from frauds. Talking about people stealing things. This is like fraud as well, right? Right. And people, there's one who's shaking his hands clear from taking hold on a bribe. He's the one who will reside on the heights above, verse 16, the heights above, on the heights themselves, verse 16. His secure height will be craggy places, difficult to approach. His own bread will certainly be given him. A king, verse 17, is what your eyes will behold. Your own eyes, verse 20, will see Jerusalem and undisturbed. That's my fatigue acting up on me that way. I get lazy with reading. Your own eyes will see Jerusalem, an undisturbed abiding place. Your own eyes will see Jerusalem, an undisturbed abiding place. I don't want to take the effort to actually read and speak the words. It's strange. My upper body is tired. It's affecting this area. Your own eyes will see Jerusalem, an undisturbed abiding place. It's pretty encouraging. Very encouraging. But there, the majestic one Jehovah will be for us a place of rivers. Right? It's a good thing. No galley fleet will go on those rivers. Whatever that means, whether it's meaning there won't be any enemy warships, could mean that. For Jehovah is our judge, verse 22. He himself will save us. It's pretty powerful. It's encouraging. It's encouraging. That's what Isaiah 33 is. Well, you know what, though? I just realized we weren't supposed to do 33. We were supposed to do 13, right? We were supposed to do 13, and I knew that. Because I've already looked at that later. Earlier today I looked at this. It's later now is what it is. But I looked at it earlier and I saw that it wasn't 33. I made that mistake earlier and then I corrected it. But now I forgot it again. So we should be looking at 13. But that's okay. We're going to be looking at... We'll look at 13 the next time. We'll just, you know, we'll swap it around. The next time we come up to the number 3, we'll look at it. So we're not being boring in the way we're doing it. We're doing it in an interesting way, right? We're doing it in a way that is going to be keeping us on our toes. John 13, though. Now, because he knew, we did Psalm 33, so I was thinking of 33 on the brain, right? Now, because he knew before the festival of the Passover that his hour had come for him to move out of this world to the Father, Jesus, having loved his own that were in the world, loved them to the end. So while the evening meal was going on, the devil, having already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, I'm tired, the son of Simon, to betray him, he knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he came forth from God and was going to God, this is Jesus it's talking about. The devil had already put it into the heart of Judas to betray him, but Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he came forth from God and was going to God, got up from the evening meal and laid aside his outer garments, and taking a towel, he girded himself. After that, he put water into a basin and started to wash the feet of the disciples and to dry them off with the towel with which he was girded. And so he came to Simon Peter. He said to him, Lord, are you washing my feet? In answer, Jesus said to him, what I am doing, you do not understand at present, but you will understand after these things. Peter said to him, you will certainly never wash my feet. Jesus answered him, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Simon Peter said to him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Jesus said to him, he that has bathed does not need to have more than his feet washed, but is wholly clean. And you men are clean, but not all. He knew indeed the man betraying him. This is why he said, not all of you are clean. When now he had washed their feet and had put his outer garments on and laid himself down at the table again, he said to them, do you know what I have done to you? You address me teacher and Lord, and you speak rightly, for I am such. Therefore, if I, although Lord and teacher, washed your feet, you also ought to wash the feet of one another. For I set the pattern for you that just as I did to you, you should do also. Most truly I say to you, a slave is not greater than his master, nor is the one that is sent forth greater than the one that sent him. If you know these things, happy you are if you do them. I am not talking about all of you. I know the ones I have chosen. But it is in order that the scripture might be fulfilled. He that used to feed on my bread has lifted up his heel against me. From this moment on, I am telling you before it occurs, in order that when it does occur, you may believe that I am he. Most truly I say to you, he that receives anyone I send receives me also. In turn, he that receives me receives also him that sent me. After saying these things, Jesus became troubled in spirit, and he bore witness and said, "Truly, most truly I say to you, one of you will betray me." The disciples began to look at one another, being at a loss as to which one he was saying it about. There was reclining in front of Jesus' bosom one of his disciples, and Jesus loved him. Therefore Simon Peter nodded to this one and said to him, "Tell us who it is about whom he's saying it." So the latter leaned back upon the breast of Jesus and said to him, "Lord, who is it?" Therefore Jesus answered, "It is that one to whom I shall give the morsel that I dip." And so, having dipped the morsel, he took and gave it to Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. And after the morsel, then Satan entered into the latter. Jesus therefore said to him, "What you are doing, get done more quickly." However, none of those reclining at the table knew for what purpose he said this to him. Some, in fact, were imagining, since Judas was holding the money box, that Jesus was telling him, "Buy what things we need for the festival," or that he should give something to the poor. Therefore, after he received the morsel, he went out immediately, and it was night. Hence, when he had gone out, Jesus said, "Now the Son of Man is glorified, and God is glorified in connection with him. And God will himself glorify him, and he will glorify him immediately. Little children, I am with you a little longer. You will look for me, and just as I said to the Jews, where I go, you cannot come. I say also to you at present. I am giving you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love among yourselves." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, where are you going?" Jesus answered, "Where I am going, you cannot follow me now, but you will follow afterwards." Peter said to him, "Lord, why is it I cannot follow you at present? I will surrender my soul in your behalf." Jesus answered, "Will you surrender your soul in my behalf? Most truly I say to you, a cock will by no means crow until you have disowned me three times." John chapter 13, very powerful. Full of many lessons, it seems, in here, in this one chapter, or very significant lessons, even if there might only be a few of them. But it seems like there are more than a few lessons here to learn from this chapter. But I'm going to cut this study short, because we've done a lot of work today. I'm tired as well. I'd love to discuss it more, but it will come back. We'll have time to bring it back to our memories and to learn about these things again. We don't need to worry about that. I mean, I'm tempted, but I think we should end the study for today. It's November 3rd, 2022, 18:17 hours, Ward Green here. Bye for now. Have a great night. I love you.